Thank you very much. That's an extremely pertinent and important presentation. We'll follow it up with one of equal quality from Dr. Bassem Nouri. Bassem comes to us from across the mountain. So he's at the hospital. He's at the CHOM. He is in the unit de Santé Internationale. He has a tremendous background that's very appropriate for this conference. Bassem is a health specialist and a program projects coordinator. He is a physician from Albania who is also trained in microbiology and virology and community health. He has a very, very high-quality background, including a stint as the Deputy Minister of Health in Albania. He is now involved in a variety of health projects around the world. His emphasis is on health policy and planning, on training, on human resources, and on project management. And please join me in welcoming in a minute. I could tell some stories. No, that's fine. I'll tell you, my only story is the first time I met Richard Gold was I was on the telephone with him. I was in Botswana. He was in Montreal. And he was a tremendous resource to us as we are sorting out some intellectual property issues in indigenous places. I'll just short circuit. There's going to be a lunch. I wouldn't have come otherwise. No, that's not true. But what we're going to do at the end of this session, at the end of the discussions, we are going to, in an orderly fashion, single file, quietly walk. No, not really. Go out and pick up your lunch outside, bring it back, and sit quietly. Don't disturb your neighbors. We hope to make a connection with our second keynote speaker, Dr. Patricia Garcia, who is a remote distance, a learning opportunity for us today. If we make the connection, we will be respectful, listening while we chew silently. If not, it's up for grabs. You can do whatever you like. I'm kind of running out of... This is hard to be an MC, you know? I know you are. I know you are. I don't dance.
See, the problem is that the University of Montreal is more technically advanced than McGill. They have 2007. We only have 2003, so we had to adjust our computer.
This is planned obsolescence. It's a good strategy for business. Okay, et voilà, très bien. Let us welcome Dr. Nouri.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I have to apologize for this little problem. It's not true. In fact, we do not have at the University of Montreal 2007, but sometimes we personally, individually, want to install these advanced technologies, and then we finish in trouble. First thing, I want really to thank you very much for inviting us and to assist. I think I feel really privileged to be here among this audience with you. What I would like to share with you is some ideas on our training programs and how we succeed or not to build capacities through our training activities in developing countries. I'll try to illustrate that through a few of our programs at the Unité de Santé Internationale and see how we shape those intervention cooperation projects through training activities, training and other activities, and non-training activities at all. why training is needed. As the first speaker this morning explained, among other things, very well, we have really big problems in today's world in terms of human resource for health. There are not enough resources, so we have problems of shortages in number, in quantitative and qualitative. For example, in sub-Saharan Africa, there are only 4% of medical schools out of more than 1,600 there are in the whole world. And 21 countries had only one medical school and 6 countries had none. Those figures come from the a publication that was published in 2004 by the Joint Learning Initiatives, which is an association of very well-known organizations such as the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Health Organization, etc., and who did very good work, especially in human resources for health. So in their publication in 2004, they were saying that half of the African countries at that time in 2004, but I don't think that much has changed after five years, those countries, they didn't have any graduate program in public health. And you see what is the difference between the number of doctors that graduate in Europe and Africa. Then there are problems in the content of the programs. There are problems in the pedagogical methods, so they are very often very traditional and they exclude practical problem-solving skills. And programs on health leadership and management are missing really everywhere. So there is a tremendous need for those programs. And of course, we see problems not only linked to basic education, means graduate and postgraduate, but also to continuing education, because people come out of schools and then they go in their clinics or hospitals and they are not trained after it at all. So the proposed strategy in this publication were to enhance competencies by educating for appropriate skills, so training, to foster leadership and entrepreneurship. So I was saying that there were no leadership programs, and to train for continual learning, so continuing education. So those were the three main strategies recommended by the Joint Learning Initiative. And this picture is a picture of a cohort, or the first cohort in our master's program in French-speaking African countries. This is based in Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso, where through one of our projects we developed this master program in population and health, which is a mixture of public health and demography. Through training programs, can we build capacities? Yes, we can build capacities at different levels. We can partly build capacities at some other levels. For example, at the academic institutions, through the partnerships we have with universities, with schools of medicine, etc., we can build capacities for delivery, for developing and for delivering these training programs. Of course, we can also try to build some capacities at health service organizations, so centers, hospitals, clinics, but sometimes we intervene even larger, broader, in order to build capacities, and there we don't need only training programs, or we need more than training programs, we need additional measures. This is a map of the world, and you see with these red dots where the countries where we have been intervening, or we have intervened, we had cooperation projects for these last 20 years. In fact, we are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, and our logo was 20 years of partnerships for a better health in the world. And probably during this year we are going to have some activities like this one. And I'd like to take three of our projects just to illustrate the ideas of how we intervene, how we develop training programs, and what impact those training programs have. So I was talking about this population health program, master's program in Africa, in Francophone countries of Western Africa, which is funded by the Gates Foundation. A second program we have in Haiti, which is support to health management capacities. In French, the acronym is PARC. And another, a small program in Albania on continuing education and how we are intervening to develop a professional development system in the country. Capacity building at the academic level, we have really through these programs, training programs, development of the training programs, we have really to face and to solve many questions, such as the question of developing an appropriate curriculum. There are different problems. Problems linked to the content, to the context, because we have to take into account the context of these countries, and especially in programs, for example, as the master's degree in French-speaking Africa is a regional program, and so you have to take into consideration the problematic of different countries. At the same time, the content of the curriculum should take into consideration and should include subjects coming from different disciplines, because we are our training programs are mostly interdisciplinary, and you have to have elements of public health, of demography, of health administration, etc. So that's a challenge per se. And then another important thing is language. In our training programs, programs are in French, but very often we have to provide through the teaching materials some English documents because they are very good, they are a classical, let's say, of the public health literature, etc. And now we have a problem because not everybody speaks English in Francophone countries of Africa, or you have even more difficult situation where you go in a country where people don't speak English or French, or a few of them speak. So you cannot teach in French, you cannot teach in English. You have to develop capacities of people to teach in their own language. The example of Albania, for example, was one of those situations where we had to develop. The philosophy of the program at the very beginning was to make the program be taught in Albanian by Albanians. And of course it was interesting, but it was a tremendous challenge because we had to develop the teaching material in Albanian. So course notes, translation of articles, translation of chapters of books, etc. And so it was a huge task in our program, but we succeeded at least to produce some 3,000 pages of teaching material in Albanian, and that was a kind of success. Then we have to work with professors, because in developing countries, of course, we have people who are well-trained, but sometimes we have to introduce new modules, new disciplines, and they have to work we have to work together to develop. And another challenge is that sometimes the universities do not have sufficient resources to come and to join our program, so they have to look around for people coming from other institutions, from other sectors, who at the same time do other jobs, and that's really a problem. Then we come to institutional challenges. Who is going to control the program? Where the program is going to be taught? In a medical school, or in the agronomy sciences? I was, for example, 2 weeks ago in Bena, which is a country in the Western Africa, and we are building there a program on nutrition. It has to be a joint initiative of two faculties, agronomy sciences and health sciences. And of course they agree, they have to collaborate, but each one of those faculties, they would like to have the program there. And it's not easy to come to find a consensus and to make those faculties work together. So we have institutional challenges. Then access to information, for sure, because internet is something that seems to us very trivial thing, but it's not. They don't have access to high-speed internet, and that's another problem. And then we come to, last but not least, financial resources, how you make the program. For the time that we have resources to implement and to develop our training program and to implement it is fine, but after the program is over, what? Who is going? How we make the government or the universities to be able to fund these programs? So you see there are many challenges already to build capacities for the program, for the training program to be developed and to be delivered in the developing countries. Now, fine, we succeeded to develop, we succeeded to provide training, but then what? Sometimes we have a lot of critics, not us, but in general. I mean, people are saying that sometimes the impact of the training programs is not the one they would like to see. Of course, there are problems sometimes related internal to developing this training program, but such as, for example, the needs assessments have not been performed in the best way. Pedagogical methods are not the most appropriate, etc. But there are also external conditions, such as lack of support systems, enabling working conditions. So people who go in their organization after having attended the training, they are start to face more problems than before. In a certain sense, let's say, the training programs be kind of a kind of victim of their own success, because people now who are trained, they are able to ask better questions, to see more problems, and of course to face more challenges in the health system who is not able to provide immediate solutions. For example, I'll take again an evaluation report of one of the training of our training programs in Albania, the training program in health planning and management for regional and district health teams. We implemented in 2005-2008 with some Swiss government funds. We asked people, after a few years, they already had attended the course, we asked them why you are not able to implement some of the knowledge and skills and know-how you learned in the course. And they, of course, said different things, such as, for example, frequent turnover of directors and decision makers, political influence in appointments versus merit-based. So the autonomy of health services not yet implemented in practice, because these training programs was done with the purpose of teaching people who would, after it, work in some health services or health clinics that would have more autonomy. And then some of the members of the teams where they work are trained, but not all of them. And the culture of the health sector organization doesn't allow the personal initiative. So you see that the broad health system does not have all the necessary conditions for our trainees to implement in practice what they've learned. And then we come to these... I want to share with you these... this diagram or this figure produced by the World Health Organization, when they say, in order to build capacities for, of course, reaching the Millennium Development Goals, and in order to develop leadership and management capacities, you have to have a certain number of managers and you have to have appropriate competence. So that's the, let's say, the area where we intervene through our training programs. But at the same time, you have to have functional support systems and enabling working environments. And there, our task becomes very complicated, because now we don't need only to train people, but also to try to intervene in other levels of the system in order to create, if not all, but at least some of the conditions for the training to have an impact. This is a concept that I took from Health Policy and Planning, an article by Potter and Brew, who were explaining their experience in India. In fact, they said they were trying, their message was that they identified 9 areas for capacity building. And their idea was that you have to intervene in the 9 areas in order, or at least in some of these 9 areas, in order to have a difference in capacity building. Because their experience has been in India that the country had a lot of training and a lot of equipment supply, which are the 2 highest, levels, performance capacity and personal capacity. But if you do not create the other conditions in the system, such as workload capacity, supervisory capacity, and to go even at the bottom of the system, which is even more important and more complex and difficult to be changed, so structural capacity, systems capacity, then it is going to be very difficult to make a difference. But it takes time. Time is very important in capacity building. Things that are related to tools, which means equipment and technologies and skills training, are easier maybe to be changed, despite the difficulties I was referring in my presentation. But when we go lower in this system of capacities, then things are starting to become more difficult, especially when we speak about structures, systems and role, the time is longer and longer. So taking into consideration those challenges, we try to, in fact, not only intervene and have cooperation projects with training components only, but also with additional interventions, such as this one in Haiti, which is a huge program where we are trying to intervene at different levels of the system, at the personal level through training programs, at the organization level, and at the system level. So we try to cover some of those components in capacity building in order to make, to valorize the training activities, because otherwise people trained, they will not be able to implement what they learn. So we're trying to intervene in their organizations, trying to provide them some opportunities to implement projects, to bring some changes, and we try to give support to the Ministry of Health, mostly for human resources policy and planning. It is complex. It is complex because you need a lot of resources, you need a lot of capacities for managing and for coordinating these kind of huge programs. And but donors, now they are probably realizing that they need training, but they need also other things in order to make a difference in the health systems of the countries. So through that program, we try to have some beneficiaries of those are, as I said, individuals, our organizations, and the health system overall. Finally, a third program is the Professional Development System project in Albania, in which we do not have a training component at all, a formal training program as such. And in fact, that created us a kind of tension with a donor agency who said, wow, you are going to make a project and you are not going to train, to make some training? I mean, you are a university, how is that possible? And in fact, when we intervene through these kind of approaches, we have problems sometimes with donors, but also we have also problems with our leaders at the university who do not understand really why we are involved in such kind of activities for capacity building. In fact, the idea of that concept is that we wanted, in fact, to build a continuing education system, because for the last 15 years the country had already so many training activities for physicians, for nurses, for midwives, for laboratory technicians, public health people, but after that nothing happened. The training activities were not accredited, people didn't get credits for that, the country did not have a system to use this training for advancing career, etc., etc. So we said, as this donor agency was proposing a long-term program, a 9 years long program, then we said, first, let's build a system. And then we introduced in the second and third phase some training activities. So that was the idea, is what we have started to do. Now we are working for building a system for certification or relicensing of medical doctors, a program for an intervention and support for accreditation of training programs, and of course some building capacities in planning, organizing, and financing the training programs. So only in these three elements, but not in the central component, which is training. So just a summary of what were my ideas and what I wanted to share with you is, through training programs, sometimes we succeed to build capacities. I mean, personal competence of people, we build capacities at academic institutions, but in some other instances, we cannot make a difference through training alone, and we have to combine those training programs with additional interventions, support, and assistance. And in other situations, you have first to intervene in order to improve and build structures, processes, so to build a new system or new organizations or a new culture of how organizations work in order to give more value to training activities and education programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Noy. That was an extremely interesting and important presentation.